Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'll know that we have some awesome guests on here and we get some great information from them. A lot of you have got in touch and asked how you can support the podcast, so we had a think about it. We didn't really want to make this something you have to pay for. I didn't really want to go down the subscription line, so we've set up a web store. We're going to be selling some t-shirts, both with Downtime Podcast written on and some without. So you can show your support. All you got to do is head over to downtimepodcast.com/shop and that'll take you straight through to the store. You'll see all kinds of product there. We've worked really hard to try and make sure we can find the best quality t-shirts possible. So they're organic, they're ethically made, they're printed with environmentally friendly inks here in the UK and then shipped in recyclable or biodegradable packaging. So it's about as good as we could make it. The pricing on the website is for free posting in the UK, and if you live outside of the UK, we should be able to get it to you anywhere in the world, and the shipping prices will be calculated at the checkout. So if you like what we're doing, you want us to keep going, please head over to downtimepodcast.com/shop and have a look. All right, whilst we're here, also don't forget to follow us on social media. We're Downtime Podcasts on Instagram and Facebook, and Downtime Tweets on Twitter. All right. Another great episode. This time we've got Troy Brosnan from Canyon Factory Racing. Troy was number 2 overall last season, had a pretty awesome season, took his second ever win. We cover all sorts of things like how he got into riding, some of the sacrifices he's had to make to be at the top, what it's like to be teammates with people like Sam Hill and Aaron Gwynn, and also a little bit of advice for shorter riders. So without further ado, here's Troy Brosnan. Troy Brosnan, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So let's start off. Give us a little bit of your background and tell us a bit about how you got into riding, because your parents are both quite keen riders, right?
Yeah, I guess mum and dad used to do some road cycling back in the day. I think dad did a lot more triathlons and, they kind of just got me into riding from a young age, just on a bike, I guess. And where it kind of all started to happen was my cousins and their friends actually started riding and racing BMX. So I was put on a BMX bike super young, I think when I was just about 3, 3 and a half, and was almost racing BMX straight away. I can remember, I don't know how I remember, but I can remember mum and dad pushing me up the jumps because I wasn't actually fast enough to pedal up them myself. So they were getting a bigger workout than I was at that point in time, running around the BMX track trying to push me up the jumps so I wouldn't fall backwards. And from there, yeah, I've kind of just progressed with BMX racing, and I guess from BMX racing with some okay results. I just got a bit burnt out starting at such a young age, and all the other kids were growing to be big, and I'm just this little junior kid still not sprouting and not growing. So was getting a bit intimidating at the same time, and that's when I kind of had a year off and didn't do too much. Still obviously did school, and I think I just bought a mountain bike and was just having some fun on a pretty basic level hardtail. And at school I actually had a bike education course come through where they teach you how to ride on the road and all the road safety rules and everything like that. So I was being a kid and doing wheelies and skids and all of that on the tennis courts when you're not supposed to. And one of the guys that was instructors there actually races downhill or raced downhill back in the day and did trials, and his name is Steve Marsh, and he kind of saw something in me, I'm not sure what, but I guess some potential that I could be a really good mountain biker or a downhiller in that sense. And he came up to me at the end of the class and was like, hey, I really want to chat to you and your mum and dad, and I want you to get you out and try downhilling. And I was like, oh, what's downhilling? I didn't even know what it was. And, kind of went talking with him, and mum and dad were a little bit nervous because back in the past they were known to go to a downhill race and see pretty much everyone smoking weed and doing all the bad stuff back in the day. So they were a little bit hesitant. But, yeah, funnily enough, we went to a down a race to watch it, and it was just a local one here in Adelaide. And, yeah, I kind of really got excited about it. Mum and Dad approved that there was no more drugs or anything gnarly going on. So from there, I just went to my first race, and, yeah, pretty much haven't stopped since. It was the most fun I've ever had. I think I came last, but I was just enjoying it way more than BMX, you know, ever did there. So from there, it's just been massive life changer from that moment on.
Yeah, awesome. So from last place to being incredibly competitive at the front end of junior racing, when did the kind of opportunity start to come to take it, you know, to take it seriously? The results were good enough that you could start to think about maybe traveling with it and getting into World Cup level racing?
Yeah, I think there was the pretty big point in time in my life where everything changed and kind of made things really real. I was doing really well in Australian races and national champs and national rounds and, you know, winning elite races when I was still technically a junior. So I guess at the point I was just having fun and riding, and I didn't really know what was going on, but Mum and Dad knew that obviously something special was happening, and they really wanted to get me overseas to Whistler and race cranks and internationally in 2009. So that was the year before I could have gone to the World Cups and actually raced the World Cup. And yeah, so I went over to Crankworks and did really well, and kind of met Sam Hill through being sponsored by SRAM and kind of being not on the same team, but I guess underneath the same sponsor. And he was speaking to his team manager, Sean Heimdall, at the time. And yeah, kind of, I guess my results at the Whistler Crankworks in 2009 were really good. I won, you know, a lot of the events in the junior category, and I guess that was enough for them to offer me a deal, and I was obviously not going to refuse at that point to be on a factory team and underneath Sam Hill and Brendan Fairclough. That's, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity there. And yeah, so that's kind of where it all changed and all started. And I guess that's kind of the stepping stones that I've used to get where I am now.
Yeah, and you have to make a decision then, I guess, at that point to kind of step out of school. And what kind of sacrifices did you end up having to make at that age to pursue the sport?
Yeah, it definitely was a tough one. I guess not for me, because as a kid growing up and you're at school, stuck at school, not liking it, and all I want to do is go ride my bike, and get an opportunity to leave school and actually go ride my bike overseas was an easy one for me. But we actually, Mum, Dad and I and the principal sat down and had a chat for actually a couple of hours about all the options and everything. And the principal was actually really stoked and excited that, you know, I had this opportunity and school is always going to be there for me, and this opportunity wasn't. So the principal was pretty much as stoked as what I was and Mum and Dad was to kind of dismiss me and let me go and kind of go for this future and this career. And I guess that leads into the hardest things that I had to do. You know, leaving school was probably one of the easiest decisions for me. It was actually afterwards all the sacrifices that I kind of came across that I had to make. You know, like with friends, you know, you start growing up and getting to 18, which is the legal drinking age in Australia. And yeah, I was kind of, you know, go out and have some drinks, but at the end of the day, when I started getting serious with it, I couldn't do that. It was lots of little sacrifices, like not going to parties and not being, you know, kind of in the group of the school friends that are doing all the fun stuff and activities and all the new kind of like drinking and driving cars super late. I was always in bed early or riding my bike. So I guess it's just a tough one that you kind of, you know, you're so young and you're making all these decisions and also traveling the world, you know, on your own. I guess you're with a team, but you don't have mum and dad there anymore and you're not even 18. It just, it is a big change in your life direction and probably something that I've learnt way more from than actually being in school.
Interesting. And those sacrifices continue, I guess, now. Like, do you ever kind of get tired of that, or are you so into the racing side that you're kind of happy to continue making those sacrifices?
Yeah, I think now, you know, I'm 24, turning 25 this year. I've kind of learnt how to manage the sacrifices and also still get the benefits of having a bit of fun. So I think it's just just learning and kind of being, I don't know, a bit more open and honest to yourself. Like, I give myself a time frame of about a month to 2 months straight after the season's done to go do whatever I want to do, whether I want to go out drinking, partying, or you know, just hanging out with friends late at night. It's kind of something that I let myself do for a month or two at the very end of the season, and it kind of wears on me a little bit and I get pretty tired and I actually get pretty excited and keen to get back into the training and really good eating and everything that goes with it.
Cool. Interesting stuff. So you came up through the junior ranks, obviously, and I think I'm right in saying that at that time you were still in with the elite guys. It wasn't a separate category. Is that right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and so you had some pretty awesome results in juniors. I think even podiuming in with the elite category. Do you think that helps the junior riders to develop? And is it maybe? Do you think it's harder for people coming up through the junior ranks now that it's a separate category?
Yeah, I think with me coming up through as a junior, but having to race the elites, you definitely have to, I guess, up your game a lot more than what you expected. You know, you're racing the best in the world, not just the best in the junior world. So, I kind of had to really like up my game. And I guess something that really helped me was having Sam Hill and Brendan Fairclough, which were, you know, top five in the world at that point, and they were just killing it. So that definitely brought my confidence and my level of riding up. And I guess by the second year of my juniors in 2011, when I did get a podium in Val d'Isola in my last Junior World Cup race, it was pretty exciting. You know, I qualified fourth and, you know, finished fourth on the day as well. So I definitely had some big nerves going on. I was feeling pretty like good on the track and good on the bike, but the nerves were really hitting me. Like I was pretty much like almost vomiting before my race run because I was so nervous and didn't even really want to ride at that point. So it's definitely a tough one, you know, being a junior and racing elites, but I think it paid off massively for me in the end.
Yeah, definitely. It seems to have converted to a pretty awesome transition into the elite field. Talk a little bit about what it's like having teammates like Sam and Brendan. Because, I mean, what sort of stuff do you learn from those guys? They must have helped a lot, right?
Yeah, definitely. I can't thank them enough for what they've done and taken me on when I was a junior onto that team. And I guess they're two completely different personalities. You've got Sam that's really quiet and laid back and just kind of lets his riding do the talking. And then you've got Brendan, which is super open and nice and friendly and I guess not more so like in your face, but he's definitely kind of, you know, a lot more around and happy and talking and everything. So that controlling, or I guess going into their riding style, is exactly the same. You've got Sam, which is super kind of like precise and smooth, and when you're riding behind him, it actually doesn't feel like you're going that fast because watching him, he's just riding things super smooth. And then on the other hand, you try and follow Brendan, and he's bloody going everywhere. He's got his back wheel trying to pass his front, and it's actually super super hard to ride behind him and actually follow him, because he's just looking like he's going, you know, so fast, and he is going so fast at the same time. So I definitely learned a lot from both of them, and I think I got a lot of my confidence from riding behind Sam and just seeing how smooth he was and feeling how easy it was to go that fast. And then also some of my style, I reckon, would be from Brendan just being a little bit more wild and loose at times.
Awesome. And then, I mean, you move from that to riding with another pretty quick guy, someone called Aaron Gwynn. How was that? That must have been pretty tough, because I guess kind of the setup was Aaron as lead rider, but there were times when you were definitely taking him to town and beating him as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely an interesting, I guess, situation that I got put in. You know, Sam Hill left Specialized and went on to go to Chain Reaction, and I was kind of, you know, just sitting there, like almost able to be, like, I guess, the number one rider or the top dog, you could say. And I kind of thought to myself, like, oh yeah, maybe this is my time that I can really show something. And Specialized kind of pulled the trigger on getting Aaron Gwynn, and pretty much, like, I was super stoked and, like, felt like it was awesome to have Aaron come on the team, and it was actually going to help me out more than him probably having me to ride with. So I was, yeah, beyond stoked to have him come on board, but I guess a little part of me was still like I thought maybe this was my time to be the number one rider and kind of, you know, step it up and go for the title. But I mean, these things are like, they're also like a business type deal, so they wanted the fastest rider and they went and got it, and I don't have anything against that at all, and I'm just pretty, I don't know, I'm pretty easy going and laid back and pretty excited just to see what things happen, and what happens in the world is always going to happen. And I think, when you go to the races and you're up against your teammate that is, you know, first in the world, and I think in 2014 I was first and second back and forth with Aaron, it pushes us, and it pushes, like, us to go so much faster. And I think that's why we were actually right at the top until Rat Boy came along and spoiled our fun. But I think it was a blessing in disguise that first year when Aaron came on board, and he actually pushed me to raise my game to that next level, where I started, you know, I won my first World Cup that next year and actually was, you know, first overall for a good part of that season. So I definitely stoked to have him as a teammate, and now, you know, got a pretty good bond, and also my mechanic with his mechanic's got a really good friendship as well, and it's kind of cool being at the races and still racing each other super closely, you know, being 1, 2, or 3 in the season is pretty awesome.
Nice one. And so now you've moved over onto the Canyon team. Was that a difficult decision? I'm guessing you probably had a number of options in that off season. How do you go about choosing, you know, which of the offers that you want to take and who you want to ride for?
Yeah, it was definitely a hard decision for me. You know, I was on Specialized from the start of my pro career, I guess you could say. So I think it was the better part of like 7 to 8 years, which is a fair bit. You know, you don't see riders actually sticking with one brand for such a long period of time. And that Specialized is all I really knew. So to actually, you know, have other offers on the table and kind of have the decision to go elsewhere was really difficult for me. And I was just kind of got to the point where, I guess I was the only rider on the factory team of Specialized, and then Lewick and the Gravity team were kind of a separate entry. And I just kind of felt like I wanted to be on a team that was solely focused on the one rider and one team to develop, you know, race bikes and equipment and stuff to go fast, and also just a kind of a change up in my career, I thought was going to be pretty beneficial and pretty handy. Kind of got to the point where I just kind of not got bored, but kind of just needed, like when you get a new bike, you always go out and ride more often. So I kind of just needed a little bit more of like a incentive push and incentive bonus, and not talking money, obviously, but actually to be on a new team and figure out these new products and things that we can make faster. And then again, it was a completely brand new team with a downhill bike that's never been on a World Cup podium before. So I was definitely diving pretty deep into the unknown, and just pretty glad that the team's, working really well, and it's feeling really amazing, especially coming into this year, and definitely haven't looked back and haven't regretted any of my decisions that I've made.
Cool. And what's it like working with Fabian? I mean, he's got a wealth of experience and a lot of success. Have you been able to learn much from him?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely interesting working with Fabian. He's got so much knowledge, and like you were saying, he's just got all the experience and that he can have in downhill mountain biking. So it's kind of, he can teach you a lot, but then it's also a lot to take in. And he's definitely got different, I guess, ways of training and racing, and I guess the format of how he spent his career and his life actually trying to be number one than I do. So as much as he's got a lot of knowledge and experience, it is difficult at times for me to actually, or I guess for us to actually, like communicate and be on the same page with different things. But definitely, really stoked with having Fab Dog on the team, and just kind of like just being there to help with all the small things as well. There's a lot of like one percenters, I guess you could say, that really make up winning a World Cup and winning an overall and a world title. So all those little things can add up to 100%, and then you're going to win. And he's definitely really knowledgeable in that, and really helped me with all those little things.
Interesting. Can you give any examples of like those little one percenters? Like what sort of things are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it's down to like really simple things, like just it's, like something like what you put in your mouth. If you're gonna eat crap, you're gonna race crap. So, as putting it as bluntly as I can, that's pretty much what it's about. And it's just so many tiny things. You get like not enough sleep on one day, that's gonna reoccur to the next 2 to 3 days of your training, and that's gonna put you backwards to where you could have been. So it's just it's just a lot of little pieces of the puzzle to actually, get that championship in the end that is pretty interesting, and actually still, I'm still learning, and I'm sure Fabian's still learning at the same time as well.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and you had quite a development in the team infrastructure over the season. I think I saw you guys at Fort William, and it was a pretty simple setup, just like a pit tent and a little van. But obviously later in the season, you had a lot more pit set up around you. Does that make a difference to you guys as riders? Does it help?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely, I guess, hard at the start of the season. We were a brand new team. We didn't have anything. We bought all the crafters and vans and equipment, and even tent and pit setup was, I think, borrowed from the enduro team. So we were so focused on trying to get the bike dialed in and everything that I guess just with how late that everything got signed and actually activated, the pit setup wasn't perfect. Well, not perfect, but not ready, I guess. And I guess the team being Germans, they're set in their ways and they want to do things right. And they definitely did things right and waited just, that couple of races to get the big motor home and get the setup and get everything looking factory and perfect for us. And it definitely showed. We got that truck a couple of, I think, 1 or 2 weeks before Andorra, It was already fairly kitted out, and we just made it kind of, you know, our own. And it showed with my result winning Andorra that I was just super relaxed. We're eating dinner, you know, up the top of the hill at the truck with all the mechanics and everything. And it was just a really easygoing and relaxed environment that lasted the whole season.
Sweet. And how did that win at Val Nord feel, right? You had your first win in Fort William in 2014, and then lots of awesome results, but I'm sure not the results you wanted between that and your second win in Val Nord, right?
Yeah, I guess for me, winning in Andorra was like a massive pressure release. It felt like everything just went off off my shoulders. I guess in Fort William when I won, it was, I guess, a tiny bit of a surprise because I didn't qualify first at any other races, and then to qualify first and win straight away, I was like, oh, dang, like that happened real quick. But, you know, from 2014 to last year, I had multiple, like, first in qualifyings and really been up there, and then kind of had a little bit of bad luck, and then also made a couple mistakes in some races where I felt like I could have won or won that race. And yeah, I guess it was just building up pressure and pressure, and I was kind of getting angry to a point where I was just like, I have to win to like keep racing and keep going, because it's just getting so much. And everything just clicked and felt super easy at Andorra. And I guess the year before, I had a really good chance of winning Andorra until it rained. I qualified first and I was feeling really good, and that massive downpour came in, and I actually thought the same similar deal was going to happen last year, where I was up the top, did my warm up and stuff, and Greg was just ready to started like raining on us, like at the top of the mountain, the rain was coming down. I was like, no, like this is going to be another year where I qualified first, and then the weather gets me. But I was just light enough where, you know, the ground was wet, it had little puddles, but it wasn't actually that slippery. And with only Greg and myself riding on the track, it was actually still pretty nice. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot more behind, I guess, just winning a World Cup, but, you know, having the truck and everything that Canyon did to lead up to that race, and Gabe and Fabian doing so much hard work to make it all happen, definitely, you know, helped us get that win that weekend.
Yeah, it must give you good confidence coming into the 2018 season, kind of two wins, knowing that, you know, you've got it sush, you've got a great setup around you. What is more important to you? Are you more interested in world champs title or the overall, or are they both kind of similarly important?
Yeah, I think for me, they're both similarly important. Like I've gotten two junior world championships and two junior World Cup overalls, and I definitely want to, you know, tick off an elite World Cup overall and an elite world championships, and I really wanted to tick that one off in Cairns last year in my home country, as well as I'm sure Mick Hanna did as well, but yeah, it just didn't happen for us on that day and on that weekend. But yeah, definitely, you know, I know I'm really consistent, and I know that I can win a World Cup overall, and I think that's like 10 times harder than winning a World Champ. So for me, getting a World Cup overall would be, you know, kind of the higher point in our racing than, you know, winning one race on one day for a World Championship jersey.
Yeah, cool. I'm going to talk about being a small rider, and I debated whether I would or not, because I kind of get bored of hearing it, of people talking about, oh, Troy's a small guy, he's going to struggle with, you know, putting the power down or whatever. But I'm a small rider as well. And I was wondering if there's any advice that you'd give to kind of smaller, lighter, shorter riders. Is there anything that you've learned over the years that's helped you, you know, go as fast as you do? Or is it literally just the same as everyone else? You just get stuck in?
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is obviously not listen to anyone on the forums that says that you can't do it. You know, there was a massive talk about my first win in Fort William, where Fort William was only a big man's track and no little guy could win. But I guess I got first that year, and Sam Hill, he's not the biggest guy either, and he got second. So I think any advice that I could give to smaller riders is just to play to your strengths. So, you know, I'm a smaller, lighter rider, so I ride, you know, really, really light on the bike and try not to smash through rock gardens or into corners or anything. I just kind of try and flow and stay really light. So, yeah, it's kind of like for anyone, like if you're a tall rider, then maybe you can go a bit faster and you can go a bit gnarlier and make things kind of disappear in your path more than actually floating over.
Yeah, cool. So one more thing, and we'll move on to some questions that we ask most of our guests. But I was doing some research, kind of reminding myself of some of your results and bits and bobs, and I was kind of I'd forgotten about it, but when I googled your name, one of the first things that came up was a video on Pink Bike of someone that's edited together all your start gate handshakes where you wave your hands in the air. It's had like 40,000 views. Did that come from? Is that something that, you know, you've picked up off a coach or a trainer, and what is it about that helps you get ready for a race?
Yeah, it's definitely a funny video, that one. When I first got sent it from the dude that actually made it, I was like laughing my head off and was just like enjoying it so much, because yeah, I guess where that's stimulated from is kind of like a bit of an arm pump reliever, and just kind of gets the blood out of your hands right before the run. And it has been given to me by like a mentor, you could say, that is at the World Cup races. And a couple of the guys do it before the race, but just not in the start gate. So
not on TV.
Not on TV, not as gnarly as what I do, I guess. But there's definitely a couple of guys that kind of get, that they might not know they're getting mentored from this one guy, but he's definitely right there and in their kind of in their team, and not so much like team in general, but in their own personal, you know, family team type thing. So yeah. I won't name him, because he'll know who he is. But yeah, he's definitely an amazing person, and something that has definitely kind of given me, I guess, an image, shaking my hands up in the air and getting ready for a run. There's so many people at home that every time I'm in the start gate, they say that they're shaking their hands with me. So also mum gets pretty upset. Like, she'll message me straight away if the camera doesn't film me shaking my hands. She'll ask me, oh, why didn't you shake your hands? And I'm like, don't worry, I did. The camera just must have not have been on me like soon enough. So it's pretty funny kind of joke we've got rolling now.
Awesome. I like it. Good stuff. Well, we're getting pretty close to the end of our time, but we've got three questions that we've asked pretty much all our guests. So we'll just, we'll hit those real quick if that's cool.
Yep.
Nice one. So first one, if our listeners had £100, which is about 180 Australian dollars, to spend to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think, 180 probably won't get you too far these days, but if you could spend that on your suspension, I think that's one thing that obviously is going to help you get traction out of your bike. It's also going to help you feel more comfortable on your bike as well. And then it's also going to be like a performance gain on, you know, making riding easier and more fun. So really you're getting, you know, two to three pretty big aspects. Instead of just upgrading your brakes, you're only going to slow down sooner and slow down faster, which you don't want to do. So I think suspension's definitely one of the bigger things.
Okay, cool. If you could wind the clock back and have a sit down with yourself age 16, what advice would you give him?
That's a good one. Age 16. I think the biggest advice that I'd give myself at 16 would be to just live like in the moment and really enjoy what you're doing and where you are and all the tough times that come with, you know, your life in general, and racing is, there's always going to be a brighter side after it, and everything happens for a reason. So yeah, I think just actually enjoying, you know, you kind of go to all these races and you might not do good at a race, but you still could be in the Swiss Alps racing a mountain bike for a living. So you got to look at the upsides.
Yeah, life's pretty good, eh? And then the yeah. final question, if you could pick one rider, either past or present, to have a coaching session with, who would it be? What would you want to learn from them and why?
That's a hard one. I was thinking in my head straight away, Sam Hill, but when I kind of think deeper into it, I've done all the coaching sessions I can get out of him. So I think apart from Sam Hill, would definitely be Nicholas Voulios, and actually to kind of talk to him a little bit last year and the year before, he mentioned that he kind of sees like myself in his riding when he was a junior. So he said, we've got a really similar riding style, and it would be pretty cool to just get a coaching session from him and just kind of see what he would have had to say and kind of how he could think he could make me faster.
Awesome. Yeah, surely Fabian can sort that out for you, right?
Yeah, maybe. He might be a bit upset I didn't say his name.
Yeah, true. Good stuff. Well, really appreciate your time today, man, and excited to see how you get on in 2018. Looking forward to seeing some more handshaking in the start gate. But if people want to follow you and keep an eye on what you're up to, where can they find you on social media?
Yeah, they can easily find me just at Troy Brosnan for Insta and Facebook, and I think also pretty easy, and hopefully I can give you guys all the handshaking I can do.
Nice, and you've got a website as well, right?
Yes, I definitely have a website. It's just troybrosnan.com, so that one's linked to everything, and I've also started up a little bit of a coaching thing for myself, which is just Brosnan Coaching. So you can go have a look there and just see kind of what I do in a little bit of off time at home.
Sweet. And that's based in Adelaide, right?
Yeah, it's just in Adelaide for now. I've had a lot of inquiries all over the world to see when I'm coming to Italy and Andorra and everything, but I'm just going to start really small with it and maybe work into something bigger later.
Sweet. Well, if you ever do some coaching while you're in the UK for Fort William Racing, then let us know. Be keen for that.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get you a spot.
Awesome. Nice one. Cheers, Troy. Thanks for your time today, man, and best of luck for the season.
Sweet. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for our episode with Troy Brosnan. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did and you want to support the podcast so we can keep making more awesome episodes, then just head over to our webshop at downtimepodcast.com/shop and have a look at our t-shirts, sweatshirts, grab something that you like. All right, until next time, get out and ride.